Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hey, health junkies. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Amy DeRees-Ling. She's a dentist, and she's the author of Solve Your Sleep for Better Health, Get to the Core of Your Snore. So we're going to be talking all about how snoring affects your overall health and your oral health and how those two are intricately connected. Now, Dr. Amy DeRees-Ling has been practicing as a dentist since 1996 in Roswell, Georgia. She's seen a lot of things in that time. And she's also the national spokesperson and educator for the American Dental Association on integrative health and holistic dental topics. She has an extensive research program in terms of her background with herbal medicine because she studied under Tirona Lodog, who is a big guru in the herbal medicine universe. So today's interview is going to be a treat for you. I can't wait. Let's get on with it. Hello there, health junkies. I am excited to bring on Dr. Amy DeRees-Ling. We're going to be talking all about solving your sleep for better health and getting to the core of your snore. And that's really what we're going to talk about today. So if you are a snorer, or if your family member's a snorer, or maybe an in-law is a snorer, we are going to be talking about it today because Dr. Amy has some personal experience in this, and not only personal experience, she is a dentist, and that makes her a big specialist in the snoring department. And so we're going to talk all about snoring. We're going to talk about her new book coming out and give you lots of information on how to get to the core of your snore. Dr. Amy, say hello to the Health Fix crew.
Hi, everybody at the Health Fix crew. I really appreciate you listening to my podcast today, having me on as a guest, and I can't wait to tell you a lot more about what you can do at home to help with your snore.
All righty. So one of the big things that I'm sure you encounter as a dentist and I encounter as a physician is that people really kind of blow off their snoring or they're embarrassed to talk about it. So if guys talk about it, they're almost proud of it. Now, ladies, on the other hand, they're like, oh, no, I would never snore. It's like passing gas. We don't do that. Those things don't happen. So how do we start talking with our family members about snoring? How do we bring it up? What's a good icebreaker to just get to the point and get going?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, first of all, you know your family member best. So, but generally speaking, I think most people, if they started to realize the health implications overall of what snoring means, then you would be concerned, or you might want to become concerned about why your loved one cares enough about you to say something about it to you. This is a lot different than you forgot to zip your pants, and you might want to zip your pants because that's socially embarrassing. But I think that's where people immediately try to go in their head is, oh my gosh, they're calling me out for something that I'm just embarrassed about. But what we really want to do is tell our loved one, I care about you, and this has major health implications because so many of our population snores, and a lot of times that's a hidden sign that you are developing problems, health problems like diabetes and heart disease. But if we can kind of bring that back in, you could live your best life. That's kind of a popular concept right now, living your best life. But you truly can live your best life if you're getting your best sleep.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think one of the biggest, you know, complaints in my office is people are coming in, they're like, I'm so tired. I'm completely fatigued. And I'll often ask all the questions in terms of the hormones and all of the, you know, adrenal stuff. But what I never seem to get to the core of is the snoring. Because a lot of ladies will look at me and go, oh no, I don't snore. My husband does. And then I'm like, okay, oh, yeah. Well, that's a big deal. And one of your quotes in the book, I think, might be really great for folks to really think about is you mentioned that poor sleep quality decreases longevity from 80 years old to between 65 and 70 years old. Maybe a good talking point.
All right. That sounds like a pretty good talking point. we have, let me decide how I want to go with that. It decreases things because it has It impacts us in so many ways. And my favorite topic, one of my favorite topics about this is when you're snoring, it changes the bacteria that are in your mouth. and I'm a dentist, you mentioned. So what that means, dentally speaking, is you're going to be a lot more likely to carry chronic inflammation in your mouth, which means either gum disease or getting cavities. Also, people that are snoring, they're not getting their the correct balance of different types of gases in their system. So one of those would be nitric oxide and not holding on to enough carbon dioxide. When we don't hold on to enough carbon dioxide, it actually clogs up our nasal passages. So it can lead to halitosis or bad breath. I mentioned that it creates a situation where you're much more likely to have a type of bacteria that leads to gum disease or lead to cavities. So you're going to run up dental bills that you could avoid if you just knew about this. So there's different over-the-counter tricks you can use, like you can learn to start taping your mouth closed. They've actually done this studies in asthmatics who learn to start breathing through their nose as they're sleeping, and they greatly decrease the frequency of their asthma attacks because and that's the one change they've made. So it affects so many things. So the bacteria that live inside you, it affects the inflammation that your mouth is going to carry, and we know that heart attacks are greatly impacted by somebody that has gum disease or periodontal disease. There was a study a few years ago done in Finland, and they found that about 33% of people that had died of heart attacks had the bacteria that caused cavities in their hearts. And those are not normal types of bacteria in the mouth. They're only just certain ones that cause cavities. They also had 75% of them had bacteria that caused gum disease in their heart. And we can change that if we can teach people to eat better and to breathe through their nose, like they're supposed to.
It seems we all joke about mouth breathers and things of that nature, but it seems like quite a simple fix. However, I have a visual in my head of taping the mouth shut, and I'm pretty sure that it's not a good visual in terms of what you're talking about. So share with the audience here, how would you tape the mouth shut? How do you go about that?
Great idea. Well, first of all, you can start doing these exercises. They're called Buteyko breathing exercises. They were created by Dr. Buteyko in the earlier part of the 20th century. He was a Ukrainian physician who came up with this method, and he did a lot of research that still holds value and truth today about the ratio of oxygen to carbon dioxide in our body. If we hold on to less than 6% carbon dioxide in our body, we clog up our nasal passages. But if you can do this at home even right now, take a deep, deep breath through your nose, and maybe do it on the count of six. So inhale, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now hold the breath while I keep talking, as long as you can. Maybe you can get 15, 20 seconds out of it, and then exhale when you can no longer hold your breath. And I want you to repeat this the next couple of minutes while we're talking. And you will find that your nose will actually open up because your body is now going to hold on to the proper amount of carbon dioxide. So we're also seeing this sort of an evolution in, if you're in the world of personal training and exercise, you'll see that personal trainers are beginning to recommend to their clients to breathe, inhale and exhale through their nose, because it's going to have a great impact in their overall, the microbiomes in their body overall. What else can I talk about with that? You got me off on a tangent, and I apologize, Janine.
No.
I hope people out there are deep breathing.
Yes. No, I think that's perfect. I think that's perfect because really we are talking about the nitric oxide. And when I was reading your book, I was shocked about how mouthwash and hydrogen 2 blockers. So this is an antacid type of medication for the folks that don't know what hydrogen blockers are. These are types of medications that are pretty common. And mouthwash, most dentists do recommend mouthwash. And these are things that mess with your oral mucosa. Let's talk, we talked a little bit about the nitric oxide and the breathing and things of that nature. Let's talk a little bit about the bugs in the mouth and how we can maintain them a little bit more. What are some of the things, since we know mouthwash can mess with nitric oxide, and I want you to talk about that a little bit more. What can we do to help maintain the bacteria? You know, we have to have the healthy bacteria, but what can we do to not let the non-beneficial bacteria grow up in our mouth? What are some of the tips?
Well, just basic oral hygiene tips. You can brush and floss your teeth. It's not so much which toothbrush you use or which product you use. But I do recommend that generally most people not use a mouthwash of any kind on a regular basis. There was a study done in the last couple of years in part by Duke University, but it was a joint effort between several different schools, where they had people rinse with water, and then increasingly concentrated types of mouthwashes up to prescription level mouthwashes. And those would change the type of bacteria living in your mouth for up to 6 hours. And what we need to realize is in this age of where we're running out of antibiotics to use, we don't have any more antibiotics to use in our pipeline. What we need to start looking at in our healthcare is not how do we kill everything in our body that's not a human cell, because you see there's for every 10 bacteria cells in our body, there's one human cell. So we are mostly holding all this bacteria in us. We want to get along with the bacteria inside us, not just kill everything, because we can't kill it all. And we're running out of medicines and antibiotics to enable us to kill things. So then we get the wrong types of balances of bacteria inside our body and inside of our mouth. And that's a lot of times what is seemingly throwing us out of balance and into having a lot more of these stranger types of bacteria that used to be a lot less commonplace. We know that acid and sugar also impacts the type of bacteria that we don't want in our mouth. They love that type of bacteria. They love the acid. So we're talking about a pH level, which is a level, a measure of acid. Water is a pH of 7, which is considered neutral. But if you get below a 6.8, so like your sodas, even your diet soda or your sports drinks, those have pHs in the 1.7 to 2.5 range. And we know that for every single sip of that type of drink, it takes 15 minutes for the saliva in your mouth to neutralize back to kind of around a 6.8 to 7.2 range and more of a neutral range. So when you have your sugary drink or your acidic soda carbonated type of drink, you want to be mindful, maybe enjoy it, but then put it away, because every time you take one sip, let's say you're a steadier, you're a worker and you sip on something all day, that's what's going to get your teeth in trouble, because you're basically starting to bathe your teeth and create an acidic environment in your mouth that's going to not only lead to breakdown of teeth and potentially gum disease and this breeding of this bacteria, but that bacteria gets circulated all through your whole body. That's how it ends up in places like your heart where it should never have been.
Wow. I'm thinking of my folks that tell me that they sip on coffee all day. So they'll drink their warm coffee, let it get cold, maybe they'll microwave it, then bring it back and keep sipping all day long.
Well, coffee, if it's black coffee, it's not as acidic as coffee that's laden with sugar, or, you know, it's not as harmful to the teeth as something laden with sugar. If you make your drink, you're probably better off than if you buy a drink. Mm-hmm. You know what's in it then. But it's when you get all these syrups and these additives in there that a lot of times will additionally throw things out of kilter. And so what I tell my patients is don't sip on these coffees or teas if you can avoid it. Especially don't sip on sodas. It's my athletes that have the worst time because they're drinking, you know, these sports drinks they bring on the field to supposedly regenerate their electrolytes and those types of things. I want you to chug that stuff or drink it very quickly and then sip on water while you're drinking, while you're working or you're working out on the field.
Oh, wow. That makes sense, because now I'm thinking about, you know, folks who are running quite a bit, who are playing, you know, soccer, a lot of kids. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's something I hadn't thought about before. That's a biggie. Okay. I'm going to note that there. That is okay. A big one. Now, I talked briefly about it. It's in your book, and I just think it's something that we can just touch on for folks. In terms of our acid-blocking medications, tell us a little bit more about how those mess with nitric oxide and mess with our oral mucosa and our bugs in our oral.
Sure. So the HT blockers, well, first of all, we have like almost 65 million prescriptions of those in 2014. I know that. So we have a lot of people taking them. If you read the fine print on those types of medicines, it generally suggests that you should consult with your doctor if you're taking them for more than 8 weeks. And what happens in our current healthcare system is people's insurances change, or they move, or they don't have insurance, and the doctor doesn't have a lot of time. So there's a lot of times this conversation about how to get off of these doesn't really take place. And people are feeling better because they're not having the acid reflux problem they thought they were having. But oftentimes what you can do is actually what our base problem with that is we don't make enough stomach acid after like the age of 40. Or there's just some different menu choices that could take place that aren't happening because people don't know about it. We may be choosing more acidic food than what we've eaten in the past, and genetically, our body hasn't learned to keep up with the acid that is needed to digest those foods. So, for example, like canned food is a lot more acidic than fresh food. Like, take tomatoes, for example. Canned tomatoes are much more acidic than fresh tomatoes. Even in our baby food like bananas are highly acidic as a baby food, but bananas in themselves are not particularly acidic. So we want to encourage people to eat as much as they can, fresh produce. You can grow fresh produce. You wanted me to talk about how it affects nitric oxide, though.
Yeah.
When you don't make this type of acid and you're taking medicines that continue to block it, you are affecting your nitric oxide level because about 40% of the bacteria, the mouse bacteria contributes to about 40% of your nitric oxide making ability. So when we kill the bacteria in our mouth with mouthwash and or when we're taking these stomach acid blockers, we are eliminating our ability to make nitric oxide. And there are really hundreds of roles of nitric oxide in the body, but I would say like the top seven are that nitric oxide is the most powerful vasodilator in the body, so it helps open up your arteries and veins, preventing heart disease and atherosclerosis. It prevents the buildup of clots and things in the arteries and veins, so it prevents things from sticking to the inside of the blood vessels. It enables remodeling of the blood vessels. It creates increased blood flow to the kidneys, so it encourages your kidneys to work at their most efficient rate. Your kidneys are one of your main detoxifying organs after your liver. It helps to act as a filter to get rid of the poisons and things your body doesn't need, the waste products. So you want your kidneys working well, and nitric oxide enables that. Nitric oxide also controls the T-cell immune response. So when you make good nitric oxide, you're a lot less likely to get really sick with things like cancer or autoimmune types of problems. And it also encourages a better ratio of what we in sort of slang terms refer to as good cholesterol versus bad cholesterol, which I don't really like to talk about it like that. I use the words LDL and HDL, but it does so many big, big things. And so why would we want to choose to do something on a regular basis, like using drugs that block our ability to make this or mouthwash that might be blocking our ability to make this? So I think if you have bad breath, let's look at your diet and your gut and figure out maybe how choices of vegetables or fruits might impact that halitosis, that bad breath you have. I don't want to just kill the bacteria that are making things smell bad because we're not really addressing the cause when we're doing that. And we're hurting ourselves in other ways just because we're rinsing away our ability to make nitric oxide.
Absolutely. That's a great summary of that. And I know, guys, we kind of jumped off topic here. It's my fault. I wanted us to go towards the oral mucosa. I am the lover of everything that has to do with digestive system. But what this is all about, folks, is that we're trying to explain what can happen with diet. And diet is really related to snoring as well. As we know, most of us know that as we get heavier, sometimes we will start to snore a little bit more. And that leads us into a really great segue of talking about the negative consequences of poor sleep and snoring. Because we talked about nitric oxide and cholesterol issues. We talked about oral mucosa and dental issues. Let's talk a little bit about other things related to consequences of poor sleep. What other things? Give us a list of some of those other things that can happen in terms of
consequences. Oh, there's so many. So a lot of times we're finding with kids that the ones that have focus issues, maybe they have had a diagnosis of ADD or ADHD, a lot of times their mouth hasn't been developing in a broad sort of way. They have a very narrow shaped arch. So there's sort of a cluster. You have focus issues at school. You have crowded, crooked teeth. So the child is not developing to be aesthetically as beautiful as they might be. And they may be having some social repercussions from that. But a lot of them are bedwetters. They are pickier eaters. And they're not really able to develop into their fullest self when they're battling these types of problems. We also know that a lot of snorers might have a thyroid problem. 40% of our patients who are snoring have hypo or underactive thyroidism. So you want to know if you're one of these people. And there's a lot of over-the-counter things you can do. You can get something like on your Fitbit or a phone app, a smartphone app, where increasingly you can find companies or dental or physician offices that can allow you to check out from them overnight an over-the-counter thing that looks like an oversized wristwatch that can actually measure if you really are snoring and what that's doing in terms of your oxygen. Do you have a bona fide sleep apnea, or are you just snoring? How bad is it? And it's really nice to have that information, so then you are a lot better in control of what your health is going to be in the long term.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Technology, what did we do 10 years ago even? I know it's not 100%, but I definitely will look at that information when patients have it. I think all practitioners should. It gives us at least a little hint as to what's going on.
This is such a prevalent issue. We estimate that 24% of women in the United States and 40% of men are snoring on a regular basis. So if they knew that, what if somebody told you, Janine, you know, if I had a crystal ball, I can make it where your thyroid and adrenal glands work better. You're going to feel much better every day from now on. You're going to be able to focus and work your most efficient way. You're not going to have dental problems. And you're going to be able to lose weight more effectively. Why would you say no to that? I don't know who would say no. So that's what I wanted to put in a book, is a lot of ways that someone can systematically go through and do some problem solving to help them feel better tomorrow.
Let's go through that. Yeah, I think that would be important to go through that, because I think a lot of people, like, they instantly think, oh my gosh, I'm snoring. Oh my gosh. You know, it's either, if you're a woman, you're like, I'm getting fat, I got to lose some weight, I'm going to figure this out. Or if you're a guy, you're thinking, I do not want a CPAP. I do not want a CPAP. And I think that's what people instantly think, like, snore equals I'm going to end up with a CPAP. So I want you to tell us all about what we can do to get that snoring under control.
Okay. Well, this is, I'll lay out what I present in my book. It's like, I've tried to do it in a 7-step program, but then as a dentist, I'm a dentist, as I keep saying, but there's a lot of dental things that are available, and there's so many different ways to go with all these things. So the book is to try to summarize all these things in one place, because I didn't know where else I could tell my patients to go get all the stuff in one place. So first of all, in the book, you're going to learn what good sleep looks like. And then we have a whole section on herbal remedies for sleep solutions, or how to stay more focused when you are awake, that are over the counter and very safe. And this is all medically researched, so you will know what the science says about what works and what doesn't work, and how much do you take. And these things are relatively safe. It does have a list in there if there's a contraindication for some reason, like if you're not that person that can take this, I've got that in there. We've also got strategies to control inflammation in your mouth, but actually, when it's the inflammation's in your mouth, that's a reflection on inflammation in your whole body. So we talk about using probiotics, using fish oil, using vitamins and diet to help with that, and exercise. We talk about, there's certain vitamins that help with sleep, like vitamin D and magnesium. And going back to those H2 blockers, if you're taking H2 blockers and PPIs, you're not able to absorb your magnesium, and magnesium enables you to absorb vitamin D. And so when you can't take magnesium, your body can't relax. You can't use the vitamin D that you're getting from any source, diet or sunshine. And you're not going to be able to get your deep REM sleep where you feel rested. So let's get this information out on the table and what to do about it with either eating better or eating differently or taking an over-the-counter supplement. We also talk about the links between hormones and sleep because there are many. For instance, low testosterone, low thyroid, there's connections with these things. Polycystic ovary syndrome has a link back into sleep. And I have increasing patients that have these problems. So how do we enable them to live their best life? And then we also want to link stress and lifestyle choices. I'm almost done with this part, Janine. And then,
this is great.
The variety of medical and dental devices that are available on today's market. So you mentioned CPAP. Do you know CPAP only has a 35% compliance rate?
Wow, I thought it would be like 5%.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was kind of impressed with 35 myself, but that's a lot of people that got it. I actually had a guy in about 3 weeks ago in my office, and he's like, well, Amy, I have three of those sitting in my storage facility. I'll just bring you in one if you ever want to show what one looks like to your dental patients, because I don't do CPAP. So he did. He brought me one just to show people. And so now I can line up with my oral devices. Hey, here's a CPAP. Which one do you think you like better? Because it's like a big suitcase. And that's actually how I got involved in all these sleep appliances. About 20 years ago, my father-in-law was a Boy Scout leader, and he's passed away now. A lot of different medical complications, but he was one of the first people that had a CPAP. But when he would go on a camp out, he couldn't take it with him because at that time they didn't have the travel size CPAP. But my father-in-law was also an asthmatic, a lifelong asthmatic. And guess what one of the contraindications are for CPAP? If you make copious respiratory secretions or have asthma, you have oftentimes if you're nauseous or you have had gastric bypass surgery, you're not a CPAP candidate.
Wow.
You can't use one. You're not supposed to be using one. I have a lot of people who have that, where they have unstable cardiorespiratory status, or they have a lot of chronic breathing issues, or they have COPD. These patients, we have a lot of them, they're not supposed to be on a CPAP. But guess what they gave my father-in-law? They gave him a CPAP. And I didn't know any better. I didn't know that there were other things out there. But when he came in and was snoring, and it was embarrassing because they were making him camp out down on the other side of the hill away from everybody else because he was keeping them up, I'm like, okay, I think I can make you, I'm going to try making a snore guard for you. So that was my very first dental appliance. It was about 20 years ago. And over the years, I've tried more and more different ones. There's different levels depending on what the patient is presenting with. And then nowadays, in the last number of years, they've come out with a whole new generation of appliances that can actually remodel the airway. And there's several different brands of these out there. So you can actually graduate a patient in some cases from even needing a CPAP because you're actually physically growing the size of the airway.
That's cool.
And it's super cool. I think it's really amazing. So all of these things that you can do, you may not need a dentist involved at all, but there are some dental appliances out there, and more dentists are really excited and getting involved in there because it impacts the longevity of our dental work. We see fewer cavities. We have less gum problems because we're also teaching people about breathing through their nose again.
Wow. That's so awesome. I'm excited about this because I really didn't know prior to reading your book that you could even use oral devices versus a CPAP. I thought it was like CPAP or nothing. So this is a whole new world for me. I want to know how do folks find dentists who are trained in assessing folks for these oral appliances? Is there a national registry of folks, or do you have to Google? What do you do?
Yes. So there's a number of different social media groups, networks, professional groups that we have. Vivos, Vivos, mm-hmm. life.com would be one place they could find dentists that specifically do a lot of these types of programs, and that's it's been nationalized, so they are grouped together, and so they should all be generally running things about the same way. Not a franchise, but it's in a way, it's sort of like a franchise, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. in terms of what sort of service you ought to be able to get. You'll also find the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. Let's see, that's AADSM. I think it's .com, but it might be .org. Or just Google sleep dentist, probably in your area. Also, the ALF providers, alftherapy.com, A-L-F. It sounds like that old character who looks like a Muppet from the 1980s.
Oh, my God.
But there's a lot of connections, too, with sleep problems and histories of concussions. And so you'll see a whole network of a lot of times this is a team approach when you're involving a dental sleep appliance where maybe the patient has a history of other health issues, be it trauma or concussions or weight issues or thyroid problems. So a lot of our dentists who do these types of things are working in teams in a way, you know, with chiropractors in their area, naturopaths, integrative medical doctors, craniosacral doctors, I already said chiropractors, acupuncturists. There's a variety of different support teams because we realize that the mouth is connected indeed to the rest of the body. So we need to work together to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Absolutely.
To support that patient and their health.
Absolutely. You made an important mention there in terms of the history of concussions and brain injuries. Now, am I correct? In your book, you mentioned your daughter, yes? And a
yes,
fall?
Yes, I did.
And
yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think there's still, even this day and age with all the press in terms of injuries on the soccer field, injuries on the football field, I think a lot of us still don't take a lot of the injuries that kids have as on a daily basis as possibly being potential, you know, brain injuries, you know, falling, things of that nature. So tell us a little bit about what happened to your daughter and how her snoring started right after an injury.
Sure. So she was in preschool and she fell. She was kind of a tomboy at that time. She was running across a hardwood floor. It was a rainy day and roughhousing with the boys in her class. And she fell and landed on her chin to the point where she needed stitches. And it was a really big deal in terms of the trauma from it. There was a lot of bleeding. She remembers it. And she had these stitches in her face as a result of it. And afterwards, we noticed right away she was snoring because you could hear her on the other side of the house. And it was just definitely a new activity, a new problem that we had never noticed with her before. And she was developing bags under her eyes. And here she was, 4 years old. She started needing naps again. And she had graduated from naps like 2 years earlier. And I remember one time she actually fell asleep on the toilet. We were going to a birthday party and she was so excited and she didn't come out. And I was like, honey, are you in there? And I go in there and she's fallen asleep. Mm-hmm. And that was just completely not my daughter. And, I had had, you know, we took her obviously to get stitches right away and we're in touch with her pediatrician right away. And this is a long time ago now. This is in 2006. So a lot has happened and we have an excellent pediatrician. We always have. We still see the same one. He's wonderful. But at that time, you know, what we thought was, oh, well, the snoring. Well, maybe she might have broken her nose was the answer. But we don't do anything about that till they're teenagers. And I was like, but this is really different. She's snoring all the time. And she's sleeping all the time whenever she can. And she's not my kid. Not like she used to be. And she's anxious. So That was another part of my journey on this road. You know, we learned a lot more about diet and how that can influence focus troubles. And through the years, we tried different devices and therapies to help with focus and anxiety. She's always very intelligent, very, very creative person, but had a lot of anxiety. And if I, and the snoring really didn't get better till we did a tonsillectomy and had done a round of orthodontic work. And a few years had passed. But what I know now is when she was snoring, she was never getting her deep REM sleep. One of the reasons you'll see a growth spurt in children after they get a tonsillectomy and adenoidectomy is that you've opened up that airway and now they're getting better oxygen to all of their tissues, so they grow better. But what I can also tell you now is that there are some dental appliances on the market, like the ALF, A-L-F, that could have potentially supported her, reduced anxiety, because they stimulate some of the very basic neuronal pathways by being placed in the roof of the mouth. They attract the tongue to the roof of the mouth, and the tongue is the second muscle after the heart to develop. And having the tongue in a place that stimulates some of the neonatal types of reflexes is very soothing to a person. And they won't snore when their tongue is in the roof of their mouth, and they are more calm. And it also, the tongue therefore is able to support the palate and development. And when we can help kids revert back to nasal breathing instead of snoring, those tonsils shrink a lot of times.
Oh, wow.
So that's so cool. Like, if I had known that, I'm not saying that she definitely wouldn't have had her tonsils out. No one could ever say anything like that. Sure. But it was another option. You know, maybe there was a non-surgical option for her, because, you know, I believe that your body wants to heal itself, and that every part that you got born with, you're supposed to have for some reason. So, you know, it helped getting her tonsils out. But if I knew what I know now, back then, I would have tried an ALF first on her because of the research that's out there.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's important for parents to hear this, and even adults. You know, maybe we went through, you know, someone that's listening went through an episode like that and started snoring after a fall or something of that nature. But I think it's important for people to hear this, but especially with, you know, tongue position and things of that nature. That's just, you guys, Dr. Amy's book is so fascinating. I wrote down so many notes, and I'm not going to go through all of them because I want you guys to read her book, because I pretty much summarized the whole book in my notes, I think. Because
yeah.
I was so excited about the book. There's a lot of things that are just mind-blowing, and a lot of things that I can guarantee that most people haven't heard about, in terms of little tidbits, in terms of how snoring truly does affect your quality of sleep and all of the long-term effects that can happen to you by not dealing with snoring. So if we haven't convinced you yet out there, if you're a snorer, it's time to go get yourself evaluated. So Dr. Amy, tell us what the steps would be in terms of getting an evaluation and going through your book. I know you talked about your steps, but we got to get, okay, let me back up. We need to get folks to your book first. So let's talk about finding your book. It's on Amazon, you had mentioned. Tell us in terms of Amazon, what we've got there. Tell us in terms of how to find you if folks want to know more information, because you are in Georgia, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm outside of Atlanta, and I've been practicing down here for about 23 years. My website, I have a couple of different ones, but the one I would like to direct people to first is called Whole Healing Dental. So that's W-H-O-L-E, Healing Dental, D-E-N-T-A-L.com. Or you can personally reach out if you'd like to ask me some questions. I will email you back. I'm still able to do that. And my email would be Amy, A-M-Y, at wholehealingdental.com. And you can currently find the book. The book is called Solve Your Sleep for Better Health, Get to the Core of Your Snore, and it's on Amazon, but it will be in print in several more months. They're saying, my publisher is saying January, but if you email me, I can help hook you up with a copy of the book, and I also am launching a video series that kind of breaks down into a lot of detail the different topics that are presented in the book. If you would like to have access to the videos, you can find more information about that on my website or by emailing me. So wholehealingdental.com, and I also have a YouTube channel. So.
Excellent. And you also have a radio show, Whole Healing Radio.
I do. That's a fun, it's a hobby right now. But the whole point is I want to get good healthcare information out to anyone that's looking for it. And hopefully they'll discover something they didn't know about before, and it's not always dental, but a lot of times it ties back into dentistry, because the mouth is really tied to the rest of the body.
Absolutely. No, I love it. I love that you are out there talking about it, because I think dental and oral health is something that we still don't have a lot of dentists out there telling us about what you've just talked about today in terms of snoring, but also, you know, how much your dental health really does affect the rest of your body. It's one of the commonly overlooked parts that I'll admit that sometimes I even forget to talk about it. So I'm really excited that you were able to come on today and really appreciate all your information. And I want everyone to go out and grab her book because we all need to get to the core of the snore. And sometimes, you know what, we're intermittently snoring. And I think that's important to look at that too and find out why, you know, things start and stop and evaluate. I think we all should be paying more attention to our health and really working to help ourselves just as much as we rely on other folks to help us. But I think we have to all be our own personal advocates.
Yes, especially this day and time when we don't always have continuity with our health care year to year. People move, insurance plans, and so forth change.
Absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Dr. Amy, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Janine Krauss. I really, really appreciate you letting me come on and talk about my stuff, my book.
Hey, Health Junkies. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Dr. Amy Dayrays-Ling. She's impressive. I'm definitely going to be recommending her book to my patients. Now, right now, it's only available on Amazon in Kindle format, but she will have paper copies out by the end of the year. And I'm going to bring her back on again because what we didn't get to talk about today is all the connections to anxiety, depression, and different mood disorders related to lack of quality sleep due to snoring. Because guess what? A lot of us snore. A lot of us are embarrassed to talk about it. There's just such a taboo about snoring. But you know what? I think we need to be owning up on this and really working through why are we snoring and figuring it out. So stay tuned. Towards the end of the year, I will have Dr. Amy back on and we're going to talk about the mental, emotional side of snoring and how that is directly connected to our mood disorders. So stay tuned. Now, if you like this podcast, please head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. We need to get this information out to more people. Dr. Amy's information, for example, huge stuff that a lot of people don't know about. We really brush snoring off as being not a big deal. But you know what? As she proved today, there's a lot of consequences of snoring and poor quality sleep. So we got to be getting on these things and you got to be sharing these with your friends. Please, please share this information. Unfortunately, as the healthcare universe is today, we have a broken system and we need to be advocating for ourselves. And listening to health information podcasts is one of the ways to advocate for your own health and help yourself to be healthy for life. You survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krauss. Have a great day, whatever you're doing. Hey everybody, Dr. Janine Krauss here. If you liked what you heard today, then head over to drjkraussnd.com to find my free resources and information to know when I post something new that's juicy that you might want to check out. Plus, head over to where you get your podcasts and like, subscribe, and write a review to help get the word out about me and help others at the same time to find me. It really does help, and I really appreciate all of your reviews.